Bridges Podcast is brought to you by NRJ Media Group.
Thank you for listening. Norma, this one for me was personal. Ricky Blair is not just a guest, but he's also a really good friend, someone I've known for quite a while. And his story is wild. Someone like him going from a high school dropout to a powerhouse businessman. I mean, that really is like next level hustle.
His whole story is exciting. I mean, he started in the UK with barely anything and built a career most people only dream of. I mean, that kind of drive is so important.
It is. It's him, and it's about his passion for mentorship as well. But Ricky is really proof. You know, someone with the right guidance at the right time can really make a change in the world, can really change their entire future.
I love that he went from being mentored to now mentoring. I mean, he's mentoring the next generation of leaders. I mean, that's a full circle moment, isn't it?
It really is. And you know what? It's a powerful moment. You know, also on top of that, you got to mention his stories as well. Hollywood, business, high-stake deals. You know, someone like him has seen it all, and he breaks it down with such humility and such wisdom.
So this one is for those risk takers, the dreamers, and anyone who's ready to level up. Because if Ricky's story proves anything, it's that success isn't about where you start. It's about where you're willing to go.
It is about where you're willing to go. So let's get into it and let's get there. Today, we have someone from my past that I met whilst here at the hotel I'm staying at now.
And where is here?
Here is LA. Well, we're here at Vitello's, but in LA. Must have been, we said, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Casually, just a spark of a conversation, sitting by a pool.
It's strange. You didn't know each other?
Very strange, yeah. Okay. We didn't know each other. And here we are today. So our guest today, we are very fortunate to have on Ricky Blair, entrepreneur who has grew up in England, left our sunny shores to come over to LA.
To the sunnier California sunshine.
The much sunnier side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, it's a bit of a contrast over here. But thanks for the introduction.
Welcome, Ricky. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
What bonded you guys together when you first met?
Probably our accent, I would say, because I must have said something to the kids, or I must have been messing around, and we just started talking. And we had quite a good conversation, actually, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I just think there was like some commonality there, and we just...
It was probably, do you know so-and-so?
Something like that.
Jewish religion, it was like 1 degree of separation. Someone always knows someone else.
All right.
I'd say that's pretty much how it went. We just got on, had a nice conversation.
Yeah. Ironically, Daniel, my son, ends up working at Ricky's company 2 years later. By sheer chance, because remember, Daniel went in for an interview... And it was like, Dad, guess what? Guess who company I went to see? And it was like, it's a Ricky Blair. I went, you mean the guy we met by the pool? He said, yeah. So, it was a very small world. Very, very small world.
Maybe that's not such a coincidence.
Wait a minute.
So your son interviewed with you, but you didn't know before going in?
Not before going in. We didn't know.
All I know is we had a conversation. Daniel was in an interesting place with his career.
Right.
And I was building my company in real estate. And we had a big focus was on employing and giving the opportunity to young people. And I didn't want to unsettle Daniel with where he was at in his work. But things seemed to just align at the right place, the right time, maybe a year and a half, 2 years later. I think the right opportunity came along and Daniel came and joined and the rest sort of, the rest is history.
You're still there.
Wow. How bizarre. But I actually love stories like that when people just come back into your life, because there's always like, how did that happen? And they're, you know, anyway. And people always, I believe that people come into your life for a reason.
I'd agree.
Right?
Yes.
So, hence we're sitting here today for a reason.
Yes.
So, Ricky.
Yes.
Okay. Where we like to start is, again, understanding of who you are, where you started, you know, what drove you to go into property, to do the things that you did. Because one thing I would say is that you built up a highly successful business, one of the best in the industry. And you were, like we discussed recently, you were a real David and Goliath aspect, insofar as, you know, there's some big hitters in the property market in the UK, but I've been around for a long time. Hatton Real Estate comes along and just turns it on its head.
I mean, it starts probably as a 16-year-old kid. I'm in school, I have my exams, and I fail these exams so badly. I think my three grades were 2 E's and 1 U. And I had no I had no option but to leave school because no college or university would take me off.
Oh, oof.
And I, being completely transparent, had never felt so scared in my life because I didn't know what was going to come of my life.
Right.
And I was brought up very much to believe, as a lot of us are, that if you fail in education,
right,
you're doomed out there in the real
exactly.
world.
Exactly.
And I was in a bit of a sticky situation. I had no one there to sort of help me navigate myself out of that mess I found myself in. And I figured the best thing I could do was get out into the real world and start working immediately. And my thought was, if other people of my age were going off traveling or going to college, university, or doing all three, by the time they went out into the real world and started working, I might end up with a 3, 4, 5 year head start over them. And that could be my edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had no idea whatsoever. All I knew was I was desperate as hell to find some way of succeeding. And somehow, like miraculously, I land myself a job in a commercial real estate brokerage in central London. And this company, I'm a 16-year-old kid, they give me this job. And they're renting and selling some of the largest office buildings in central London to some of the biggest companies in the world.
Right.
And you're probably wondering how I managed to land myself such a job.
I'm perplexed. I'm like, how did a 16-year-old even land that gig?
Well, it wasn't as glamorous my job as it sounds.
Okay.
My official job title was the office junior.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of refer to it, looking back now, as like the office bitch, basically. I literally, there were 60 people working there. And from the minute I walked in the office every morning at 8 a.m. to the minute I left at 6 p.m., whatever anyone needed, glass of water, a sandwich, a cup of coffee, something printed, some mail delivered. They came to dry cleaning.
So it was admin.
I was stuck in this basement, which looking back, it felt like a dungeon. There was no windows, the ceiling heights below. It smelt down there. And I was going nowhere very, very quickly. And I remember looking back, having this overwhelming feeling that the people that fail education as badly as I did, this is literally what happens to us. We end up down here in like this dungeon. One day, out of nowhere, I get a call which completely changed my life. I get a call from a complete stranger, a guy called Nigel. And Nigel was this 55-year-old, super, super successful British guy, multi-millionaire. He owns something like 300 bits of real estate all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Nigel invites me out for lunch. And immediately, I'm completely intimidated. I can't understand why he's taking me out for lunch. There's nothing I can do to help him. I don't know anything about real estate. But I've got nothing to lose, and I go for this lunch. And Nigel asked me about me, and I told him everything I pretty much just told you, that I failed, that I was scared. And I also told him I was determined to find some way of succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And after, he asked me a couple of questions, and I'll never forget, he looked up at me and he just said, Ricky, I'm gonna help you. And I thought he was joking, and he definitely wasn't joking. From that minute on, Nigel just took me under his wing. And every 4 weeks, without fail, we'd meet at the same pizza restaurant in central London, the same table in the window, and I'd go along with like a scrumpled up piece of paper where I would just ask him, even to this day, I'm obsessed with asking people questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask him about how he succeeded. He would answer them and he'd just teach me. But what I started to realize was he wasn't teaching me what school had taught me or what any of my friends were learning in college or university. He was teaching me the things you needed for the real world, to succeed in the real world. Things like how to goal set, how to manifest,
right,
how to
be... he taught you how to manifest.
Yes.
You were 16.
16, 17 at this time.
Whoa.
That is young.
Yeah, that is young.
More than anything else to understand it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was giving me books to accompany it.
Okay.
But he was also teaching me about how to use your intuition, how to make decisions, mm-hmm, how to be happy, how to do what you love. But
it's
also
like living life lessons,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But how did he get hold of you? I mean,
He knew of my dad. My dad was an antique jeweler. And I think Nigel bought a piece of jewellery from my dad. They started talking. And my dad said to Nigel that my son Ricky's gone into the business. And Nigel just said, let me reach out to him.
Right.
And then he just stayed with me as my mentor. And from then on, things started to just move. Like, I got a promotion from the dungeon to the second floor.
You saw a light. You had windows.
I saw a light. and just normality. Then I got this new job in another company, and all of a sudden I started to earn money and things were moving and I was learning and I felt useful and things were just sort of starting to fall into place. But then I had my first big goal, my first big dream was I always wanted to go into business with my best friend, Sean. Mm-hmm. Sean and I, he grew up with me. We went to the same primary school when we were 6 or 7 years old. And Sean also dropped out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this harebrained idea that I wanted to set up a business with him. I just started to implement all the things Nigel taught me about visualization, manifesting, setting goals, the importance of knowing what it is you want. Sean thought I was crazy when I told Sean years prior that we were going to settle this business together.
Especially at that age as well, right?
Yeah, he looked at me like I was mad. But I think you talk about what drove me. One of the things, if someone tells me I can't, I just see red. And I think Sean thinking I was crazy for even considering setting up a company one day, he thought I was crazy. So I just, this is what's going to happen. And then when we were 24 years old, we set up our first company, Hatton Real Estate. It was unbelievable. I think I've got more comfortable saying in America than I was able to in England, because I think the humility doesn't work as well here. But we completely transformed and revolutionized the entire commercial real estate sector in central London. And I think that was a hybrid of tenacity, work ethic. I think it was absolutely being in the right place at the right time. But also, Nigel, one of the most important things he taught me about business was you don't compete with what people are doing. You change the landscape. Or as he would coin it, he'd always say to me, you don't compete, you change the game. So all I was interested in was not how could I compete with those people. It was like, how can we innovate? How can we transform the industry? And it was unbelievable. I mean, you referenced like the David and Goliath. We were competing with the biggest real estate companies in the world. And I think, A, we were so innovative and so doing things so differently to the big companies that that was what gave us our edge. We had this confidence that if we could get in the room with a real estate developer and we were going to get the ability to pitch for the work, millions of square feet, hundreds of thousands of square feet of office buildings. But we believed we could win the work. And we were. We were winning. It felt like we were winning pretty much everything.
Take me back. I'm still on, how does a 16-year-old, how were you so receptive to the advice that you were getting? Is it something that you deep inside believed that you wanted more? I mean, because you take the work of manifesting and visualization, that's that there is a belief, trust, there's all these other words that have to exist in you for you to be even open to it, first of all, and then actually believe in it and then later on exercise it.
It's a great question. I think there's two parts to that. One is I would be very skeptical about that sort of stuff, manifesting, visualization. It all seems a little bit woo-woo. But I grew up, one of my very good friend's mother is a medium, healer, reader. So I would always ask questions.
Yes.
And there was part of me that normally would think that's a bit crazy, but I knew this woman. I knew she was smart. She had a head to, you know, she was just a smart woman. And I just asked her questions about this sort of stuff. And the other thing is, when you're a 16, 17-year-old kid and you've failed so miserably, and I joke, you're stuck downstairs in the dungeon, you know, making people's coffees, you have got nothing to lose. So when Nigel's sitting there telling me how you get, like, you know, he said, like, life's like a menu. If you can see on the menu, you can choose it. And if you can choose it, you can have it. Like, it sounds like some sort of gimmick. But when you're a 17-year-old kid, and A, you have nothing to lose, and B, you're hearing this from someone who you admire, he's probably one of the smartest human beings I've ever met. And I just started to mess around with this visualization, manifesting, and all the rest of it. And I started with small little things.
Right.
Like
a parking lot or, you know, finding a $5 bill on the floor or something like that.
And those sort of things. And then it was things like a car. Like, I wasn't a big car guy, but I just thought, what's a stupid thing that would be fun if it happened? And if it didn't, I wouldn't care. So it was a Porsche and it happened. So I then just thought to myself, if this works, why don't I just keep raising the bar and keep making the visions as big as I can? That's kind of what sort of prompted me on the manifesting process.
And it became your go-to, it sounds like. So once you learned the ways, you practiced them, right? You got a promotion. And then your mindset was already driven that way? Like, you started hardwiring yourself to believe that and live like that, yeah?
I got obsessed with setting goals.
Really?
Obsessed. I learned very young that it's something like 1% of the world population know what it is they want. If you take that group of 1%, 3% of that group will actually put pen to paper and write down their goals. And the ones who write down their goals are, it's something like 10 times more likely to achieve the goals they've set for themselves. I was just laser focused on goal after goal after goal. So it was just like, next, my own company, next, revenue numbers. When I talk about real estate, I'm not this phenomenal 10 out of 10 real estate agent. The difference between us and what we did as a company and our competitors was we knew how important it was to set goals. We just always knew what our North Star was. And when we ticked them, we just went to the next thing. And I've just been setting goals ever since.
Wow. And is that something that, as you started your own company, you started implementing, right? That exercise of goal building project and visualization, was that your management style and your leadership style that you followed?
Amongst my business partners and I always set the vision for them.
Okay.
Like I wanted to sell that company. So my dream was to move to America and to do something which I always wanted to do since I was a kid in a different field, different arena. But I knew we had to sell that company and I mapped out that vision and there was a day, bizarrely, where I presented that vision to my two business partners and they both looked at me like I was completely bonkers. And I think there was some cursing going on. They basically told me to get out of their way. Yeah. Not everyone knew the goals. Like you talk about visualization, manifesting and setting goals. I never told anyone what my goals were. I never told anyone what my dreams were. Because I was always told as a kid what couldn't happen or wasn't possible for me.
Right.
So I just thought if I didn't tell people what my goals were, no one could tell me what wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I was always told what wasn't possible.
It's probably better to keep it to yourself anyway. Let me ask you a question. Mm. So amongst Sean, was it Michael?
Michael.
Yeah, as your partners and your star, your team. Okay, did you share in terms, not what your goals were, but the idea of manifesting, the idea of, you know, look, if you see it, you can be it. You know, that type of view? Or did you still keep that to yourself?
We had a huge responsibility. So when it came to hiring staff, almost as a way of thanking Nigel, I had to pay it forward. So we'd only hire young kids. We only employed kids coming out of school, college, or very early on in their careers. And I felt it was my responsibility to help them the way Nigel helped me.
Sure.
No one taught me how to lead people or manage people or build a company because I didn't go to business school or anything like that. But the way I learned was I looked at sports managers and I watched how they led their teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest managers, and this links into like manifesting and self-belief, the best players in the world, I learned from reading their stories, the reason why they got there was because their manager, their coach, made them believe they could be the best. And because they believed it, they became it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my responsibility with some of these young people was making them aware of their potential and actually making them believe they were at that level. So there was an element of, I guess, manifesting indirectly in that respect. But when it came to the big visions and dreams for the company, which the ultimate dream was to sell the company for tens of millions of dollars, pounds, I only shared that with my two business partners. But the mini targets along the way, I shared with everyone. And the reason why we decided to share it with everyone is because when you've got three people or two people believing in a goal, believing in a North Star, that's pretty powerful. You're literally doubling or tripling the potency, the power. When you've got 30 people buying into it and actually believing in that, believing we're going to hit that number, that's like rocket fuel.
Right.
So we utilized it in that kind of way.
See, it works.
I know it works. I've been doing it myself too, but it's always so nice to hear someone who's applying it to business and says it outwardly, like publicly, because it is a bit woo-woo. But when you sit down and you actually start meeting professional athletes, visionaries, this is the same formula that they've have in their head of how they achieve. And you always wonder, well, how do you get there? Were you given a silver spoon and you're like, no, I manifested it. Like there's something energetically that happens in it. But step one is believing it and knowing that you can do that.
Yeah, but do you use it in other aspects of your life?
Yeah, that's going to be
my
question.
I use it in everything.
Yeah, so it's a way of living, isn't it? Yeah, a bit.
In every aspect of my life. I think the biggest dream I ever had was moving to America.
Why did you want to come here?
There's a long answer.
Besides
short,
the obvious, the sunshine, no, the food.
As a 6-7-year-old kid, I always wanted to be in America.
Okay.
I always, it sounds bizarre. Like there's part of me sometimes think I was born in the wrong country. That there's something about America and the belief out here, the American dream, which you probably think, what's he talking about? Like there is this ability to go and do whatever it is you want in this country. And, you know, a friend of mine, he said it perfectly about 6 months ago. He went back to the UK, and I'm sorry if I'm speaking out of turn here. Talking about the UK versus America, no matter what's going on in the UK, there's always a bit of like maybe skepticism or a bit of like, I don't know, just not, I don't know if negativity is the right term, but in America, there's always, no matter what's going on, there's always a bit of hope. There's always this belief that something's possible.
Yes.
I'll put it to you this way. Mm-hmm. So in the UK, it's very much the answer's no, what's the question? But in the US, it's very much the answer's yes, what's the question?
Yes, it is.
That's how I would interpret what you just said. Yes. It's exactly how I feel. Look, we're very similar. I have probably for the last 20 years tried to find a way to work in the US. Uh-huh. You know, that's been my dream. Okay. Now, until I met you, I didn't know. Norma, that is.
Yes.
I didn't know what manifesting was. I'd never heard of it. It didn't even enter in my head. However, from conversations I've had with Norma, from books I've read and reading, all of a sudden, things it says make sense. It really does make sense. There's certain things, when you look back in your own life, you think to yourself, I understand why that happened now. I really do.
Yeah.
So obviously it was on my mind enough that Norma and I met, we had another partner, and we set up a business, and we set up our podcast, which has been, this is now, we've been doing it since August last year, so just over a year. So that's great, and we have a company over here. So one of the goals I set myself a long time ago has come to fruition. And the reason why it took so long is because I got in my own way, because I didn't know what it is or how I was going to do it or how to make it happen, how to believe it into existence. And I think that's a lesson I've learned along the way.
Did you figure out the how?
Yeah.
And what was that?
The how to do it was to do it with someone that I trusted over here. For someone to come over here on their own and to do something with not knowing anyone is hard, okay? Because you got no route to entry. Okay, so brief story. So Norma and I met at a trade show in January last year. Mm-hmm. I got introduced. It was an event I wasn't even going to go to. I turn up. The guy that was having this mixer said, look, I'd like to introduce you to someone. Come over here. Introduces me to Norma. Okay. Norma used to work for Paramount and George Lucas at Lucasfilm. No. Yes. Yes. Really? Okay. Ensued a half an hour conversation of me just staring. Unbelievable. I couldn't believe that, there was someone that was been in an industry that is almost like sacrosanct. And I just loved the conversation that we had. We really hit it off. Then we met again. Norma came with her company to London. I got asked another event, met her. And then a couple of weeks after that, I emailed Norma. I said, look, I've been kicking around the idea of doing a podcast. Are you interested? Norma came back and said, yes, I am. And it kind of went from there. The only reason why I asked Norma is because I felt comfortable asking her because of the conversations we had. And I only had two conversations, but I just felt comfortable. I felt like Norma was someone I could trust. And that was the how. That, for me, was the how.
But you didn't try and figure out the how, did you?
No, it came to me. It was just there.
That's it.
And that was when I asked you the how.
I know. I was staying quiet, too. I'm like, I wonder if he's going to answer this question.
I teach. Yeah. We have courses where we teach business owners and young kids coming out of college manifesting. And it's a 6-8-week program. And the one piece of the 6-8-week program that I wouldn't even say blows people away the most, but that surprise them or allows it all to make that bit more sense is all around the how. And it's, you don't need to worry about the how. You can't work out the how. You just need to know where you're getting to. And the hows, i.e. the serendipitous synchronistic moments you're referring to as to how you guys met and all the rest of it, the how presents itself. You're literally like drawing it to you. You magnetize it to you.
The laws of attraction start coming into play.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, but you know why we get stuck is because we're programmed that way. School, our logical brain, you need to have a plan. Everything needs to be ironed out. The steps. I mean, even when a simple example here in the United States, like when you're in grade school and you have to, you're doing math, you have to write out all the steps. Your teacher would force you. If you don't show me all the steps to validate how you got the answer, then the answer's wrong, even though you put the answer in there. So we're trained that way in school. And so there is this thing of, if there isn't a security, if there isn't the logic, then it's flawed. So it's hard for us to get out of that the way we've been programmed. You're smiling.
I am smiling because I think you're absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more, but I think there's a bigger problem that occurs even before that process.
Okay.
We're talking about figuring out how to achieve a goal, how to achieve whatever it is you're trying to get to. But the even bigger problem, in my opinion, is we don't even know that we can set goals or choose what we want from our lives. Yeah. And that society, school, parents, the news media, that gets in our way at such an early age. So as kids, we're, you know, young kids, we're all like dreamers. We've got this like childlike nature to us. That by the time we enter the real world, that's gone. And if we still have those dreams or goals intact, it's either because you're incredibly lucky, a little bit different or quirky or crazy, or you have just an incredible parents who, you know, out in LA, you meet movie stars, actors, musicians, entrepreneurs that knew as a kid what they wanted to do. But the beauty they had or the fortune they had was they had parents on their side that actually supported and believed in those dreams. Mm-hmm.
It's funny you say that, actually, because we've probably interviewed maybe 35, almost 40 people.
In total.
And the one thing that you find that comes across is that I would say 99% of the people that we've interviewed have come from nothing, as in they don't have a Hollywood background.
They didn't have a silver spoon in their mouth.
No. Right? Yep. So, but what they've done and how they've got where they've wanted is because they've wanted it. There's a desire there. And one of our guests described it as almost an obsession to get where he wanted to get to. Because he could see it, you know, and at that I'm interpreting it as visualization. He knew he would get there. They all knew they would get there. And they wouldn't accept.
And there is this, and then it goes even deeper. It's this knowingness. I just know it like I know my first name. There's a draw, there's a pull. It's there. And I cannot explain it to you. I just know it's my thing. And so when it's your thing, then it's your being and it ends up being your truth. And you can't argue against anyone's truth, your own truth, right?
Absolutely.
That's it. That's who you are. It's almost soul-like kind of, right? Mm-hmm. And so you using that, and it sounds like going back to your career, you applied that, but you were obviously successful in it because you created this. You sold your company for how much?
It was, in dollars, it equates to approximately $30 million.
Wow. So that kid... That struggled in school for reasons that you haven't shared yet, but he struggled in school. Like, do you have conversations with that kid that struggled? And do you say, we did it? Or you're like, we're not done. So I got very profound now.
No, I can't believe it happened. I can't believe it happened.
All right, so let me ask you on that, actually, because that was your goal. Mm-hmm. And you almost willed it into existence. Mm-hmm. So by definition, it happened, and it happened pretty much the way you wanted it to happen. So you should believe it happened.
I know exactly what you're saying. And it's now looking back, it blows me away. Mm-hmm. But I was in Malibu about 7 or 8 years ago, and I went to the ocean. I went to the beach, and this is a true story. And I had this visual of me being in America. And I don't share this story that often because it does sound a bit nuts. I had this like vision against the end of my life and regretting not coming to America. Like, I didn't want to be on my deathbed or whatever, regretting it. So I promised myself in that moment, I gave myself 3 years. And I promised myself that if I don't get to America in 3 years, I would just drop everything I've got going on in my life in England and I'll find a way of getting there. So I went back to the hotel, which was the hotel you're staying in right now, the London, and I sat on the roof terrace and I wrote out this business plan. And this business plan developed and it ended up being this like 200-page document that my two business partners were unaware I'd put together. And the reason why they didn't know I'd put it together was because if they knew I was putting something together, they'd been on my case. They'd been nudging me. So I spent the whole summer writing out this vision, and the end of the document, the 200 pages, was this number, which equated to about $30-odd million. And copying Jim Carrey, I wrote out the check, and I went back, presented it to my two business partners. They basically told me both where to go. They thought I'd lost my marbles, and they were annoyed with me, because they're like, why would you put that much pressure on us? That is stupid.
Right.
And I had this check, which was in my wallet, which kind of disheveled, but it's whatever, and then... And literally to the pound, the exact number. was what we got for it. And
I bet they didn't say that to you when you agreed that deal.
Do you know what? It's funny because now goes on when he gets asked about the story goes on a podcast, he now tells the story about how Ricky had this harebrained idea.
He's like, it was all Ricky's idea. And that check is, we're trying to tape it back together and frame. Well, that check.
I still have the check.
Yeah. You do?
Okay, I promise
good.
You.
Good. I bet they believe in it now, don't they?
I mean, I think absolutely they do.
Ricky, that's a great idea story.
Thank you.
Where is this? Because it's energy.
I mean, you're talking about decisions and about a knowing.
Yeah.
I was inspired by people like, you know, you talk about manifesting. I used to get frustrated as a kid. I would research the hell out of this sort of stuff. I would consume and devour everything I could find. The why people struggled with it, i.e. the how or the timing, or there were so many reasons why people struggled with it. But then you would go out there and look at successful people and you'd see they all knew how this stuff worked, some consciously, some subconsciously.
Right.
Like the most extreme example, and probably not the best example, depending on what your views are, Donald Trump.
Right.
Donald Trump is one living, breathing, manifesting machine.
Mm-hmm.
He just manifests, you hear him. It's positive, positive, positive. I am the, you know, he's always talking about what's happening, what's
mm-hmm.
going to be.
Mm-hmm.
When he was a kid in New York growing up, his parents took him to church, and the pastor who gave a sermon every week was a guy called Dr. Norman Vincent Peale.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Norman Vincent Peale was a guy that wrote all these books about the power of positive thinking. So it was drilled into Donald Trump as a very young kid. But, you know, Will Smith was another massive inspiration of this sort of stuff. Again, regardless of what you think of Will
right.
Smith, there was two videos or clips that he spoke about which had a massive impact on me. The first was, he just said, like, your goals, it's not a hope or an aim. You just decide. You decide what it's a decision. It's not, this is what I want. This is what's happening. And then with his level of grit and determination to make it happen, again, this is a really extreme thing, but it hit me. He said, it's like something like, I'm going to get on a treadmill in a gym. And there's a guy or a girl on the treadmill next to me. And he'd be competitive. So he'd start running and he'd say, there's either two things that are going to happen. Either they're getting off first, or I, as in Will, are going to die in the process. Meaning he couldn't give a shit.
Right.
That was what was happening.
Right.
And that was it. That's the level. And it takes time and the hows, which we get so... You know,
mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs was big about the how. He knew exactly mm-hmm. how that sort of stuff worked.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs gave an amazing speech in a university.
When MIT,
He talked about the dots joining. He's talking about the how. You don't.
Right.
He said you don't connect the dots looking forward, only back.
Yep. I get that. And that was something that I told Lyle... So Lyle Workman, who we interviewed before you joined, I told him that the one thing in when I would sit at Skywalker Ranch and I would sit next to the Skywalker Ranch, you know, the sound, the engineers, and I would see them creating stuff and I would tell them, you know, I just learned from them. They said, we would focus on the end.
Mm-hmm.
We know how it's going, what it's going to sound like. We know how people are going to be moved by it. We know the ripple effect. The score is going to happen and how it's going to affect people's life. We focus on that.
Yeah.
When you focus on that, everything just comes together. And it was just like, holy shit, really? And so they tune into that feeling. And then when you do that, things just start coming into play. And that is what that level of thinking and release and letting go was a big aha moment that it hit me and I saw it firsthand and it made me think, all right, well then that's what I need to do. I just need to let go and trust. Right. And that goes deep and profound. But the fact that you were introduced to it in such an early age, like, well, no wonder now you sold your company and now you're on to goodness. So you're on to things that you really want to do, right?
Yeah, go. Talk us through what you're doing now. Give us a bit more of an understanding.
How would I describe it? I would describe it that we made a business out of giving young people an opportunity.
Right.
And that led me to going into colleges and universities in the UK. I knew there was this pain point that when a human being transitions from the education process to the real world,
mm-hmm.
no matter when that happens, whether they're 16 or 25, where they succeeded in education or failed, where they know exactly what they want to do next, they've got no idea whatsoever. That is a really tough moment. And I've been trying to figure out what is the solution to that problem. Whilst there's that problem, you touched upon education before. The education landscape is changing dramatically at the moment. I think fewer people are enrolling in college now than ever before. Mm-hmm. In America today, the dropout rate in college is almost like one in two. It's up to nearly 50%. So I've been trying to figure out what the solution is. And we basically interviewed hundreds of college graduates, college students, kids that are considering whether to go to college or not throughout the US over the last 3 or 4 years. We've tried to understand what is their challenge. Why is this post-college depression, which is a real thing, by the way, why do they struggle so much? And we've whittled it down to three unique reasons. One is fear. They're scared as to what's next. They don't know what they're going to do with their lives. They're scared they're not going to fulfill their potential in life. The second is loneliness. It can be a lonely path. As you guys know, like the path of an entrepreneur can be a lonely one, or someone, you know, successful people, ambitious people. It's a lonely journey. Mm-hmm. And the third is, we just heard it time and time again. Young people would say, I just want someone to show me how. College, I had fun at. It was a great experience, but no one showed me how to navigate this next piece. Right. So we've created this one-stop-shop mentoring platform that provides our students with the real-world teachings, the mentorship, the support, and all the resources they need to get to wherever it is they want to get to. I think our first job is actually to help them figure out what it is they want from their life, and then we put like a unique plan together to help them get to where they want to get to.
The way school is structured is so antiquated. I mean, I feel like even in middle school and grade school, kids should be taught rejection. Mm-hmm. Kids should be taught, you know, things are not fair.
Yeah.
Kids should be taught these real life lessons. Kids should be taught to volunteer. I think there should be, in high school, there should be credits. Everyone should work in a service industry. Be a waiter. Be a waitress.
Agree.
Because you learn a lot when you actually have to work and service people. There's so many things that I feel like our school system, especially here in the U.S., it needs a revamp. But the fact that you decided to do that, but why did you decide to do that and not build another $30 million business?
I always had this ambition as a kid to do something which would have, to put it bluntly, maybe like an impact. And to do the same real estate thing all over again didn't appeal to me. Okay. And America did. And I wanted to test myself. I think some people could think it's completely nuts and crazy. Like, I'd already put myself through enough stress and pressure. And also just, I think the impact a mentor had on me, I felt like, I don't know, I felt like I had to do this. And that is really why I'm out here in America. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't probably be here. Like, I've got to figure this out, because there are lots of young people that, I don't know why I'm just this lucky one that came across a mentor that had such a big impact on my life. Like, that I shouldn't be the rarity.
Love that you said that. I should not be the rarity.
But it's also, sorry to like throw a load of statistics at you. Yeah. 80% of CEOs in America have received mentorship at some stage of their lives.
Right.
Nearly 8 in 10 people want to have a mentor, but only 3 out of 10 of us are lucky enough to find someone. Like, why? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mentorship has such a big influence.
Yes, it does. It does. It really, really does. A profound, I mean, we just interviewed my previous boss, and I gave him this little award, which he got all choked up, and he sent me a long text. He's like, it was the world's greatest boss, because even though he was my boss back in 2000, not even that, in the early 2000s, his leadership style, I will never forget. First of all, he said, it's okay if you're a little animated and you use your hands, because I'm very, I use my hands a lot when I speak, but you're passionate. Mm-hmm. And that passion is infectious. So I'm going to help you. And he did. He helped me. He gave me promotions, and he put me in positions where I could easily be myself. And then he was pushing me, be more you. And then I had a whole bunch of bosses after him that were not great. Mm. And I always refer back to his leadership style. And so the leader that I am today is because of him, because he exposed me to it. And I will always give credit to him. And when we win an Oscar, I will credit Rob Hollick somehow in that speech.
Okay.
Because he doesn't, I don't think he even realizes how much he affected me. To have someone believe in you, to have someone say it is okay to be you, you do not have to be in a box, is very releasing to a kid who had big dreams and didn't grow up with a silver spoon in her mouth and was told no all her time. And then you find someone who says, yes, and why not do more? It's incredibly powerful.
Have you shared
right?
with him what you just?
I did. Today, yeah. I did. I shared it when I gave him the award.
But then, okay, so to take that, yeah. okay, if you look at society today, I mean, that was 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And not, but a lovely guy, and yeah. I met him today, really, really lovely. Yeah. But we live in a very selfish world, mm-hmm. okay? We live in a society where it's me, 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 me. And a lot of that is driven by social media because everyone wants to be this vision of what is perceived as being perfect. It doesn't exist, no such thing as perfect. So there's very little room for people to want to take mentorship because people, you know, you look at the, is it Gen Z, the current generation?
Yeah, Gen Z and Gen Y, I think.
Yeah, but they, I mean, I'm probably going to get shot down from what I'm about to say, but they believe everything is instantly downloadable because they live in a world where everything is instantly downloadable. Everything they want is on their phone. You cannot download experience. The only way you'll get 5 years experience is by doing something for 5 years. No matter how, you can't cut it any other way. Again, you can't shortcut that. Okay, you can if you take on someone that will, or you have the, you have been blessed by having a mentor, someone that will guide you through,
yeah.
you know, a Nigel of this world that will turn around and say, you know what, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you realize your dream, okay? Or I'm going to help you realize a dream you don't even realize you've got yet. Do you understand?
I do, and the thing you said earlier on, which was interesting, how we see online this version of success, the cars, the boats, the yachts, whatever one's version of success looks like. And there's and it gives this perception that it's that simple to achieve that at 19, 22, 23. Sure. That's a dangerous, damaging thing. But I think there are plenty of people out there that are realistic enough right. about what it takes.
No, and absolutely. And those ones, absolutely. If we are able to reach out
yeah.
to these people... Mm. In what we do and give them an opportunity or give yeah. them inspiration even to pick up a book or go online and look for something, go and look for what's your company called?
The mentoring platform.
Go and find a mentoring platform. Go and do something to help facilitate a change in their life.
Right.
Then we've done something right. You know, and that's what this is about. This is the essence. You know, we've got five pillars in our business. Okay. So inspire, illuminate, navigate, pay it forward. Promote positivity. Now, those are what we stand for as a company, brilliant. You know, and that's what we project out there. And we want to see people succeed. You've got to want it as well.
I don't know why we're not all given this information.
I don't know.
At a very early age.
I don't either. But you need to start at an early age because that's when you're the most influential. That's when you're trying to identify, who am I? Do I belong? Should I be here? And I don't know either, but I think you can shift someone's mind, but they mm-hmm. have to be open to it and then follow through with it because it does take work. It is not something that, oh, you read it and you're like, oh, okay, great. Now I'm going to be doing this way. No, it's like, it's a new muscle, right?
If you're going to go down the road of conspiracy theories, there is a belief that this stuff was kept away from us because we're creators. We are right. all creators.
Yep.
If we're not aware of how this stuff works, we're not anywhere near as right. powerful. And there's a belief that once upon a time, someone kept this stuff away from us and it seeped through to just a few people. We should all receive this.
We should all receive it. I think we should all receive it. And I said this a couple of times. And when we had Terry Nunn here, right, she said the same thing. She's like, the universe is benevolent. Hmm. The universe actually wants to see us happy. The universe will do, and if Blue believe the universe is more creative, we do have a higher self and a higher being, and this is just one aspect of us. There's yeah. multiple aspects of us, and the world needs good now more than ever, and we all have a gift.
100%.
If I was able to,
yep. tell me.
I would buy everyone on this planet.
What? What would you buy us?
Manifesting Your Destiny by Wayne Dyer. I would do, because that is a very brief book. I mean, I've been reading that book for a while, but yeah. I've taken my time reading it because I want to take it in. And it's so... 18 months ago, I wouldn't have known what manifesting was if it hit me in the face. But it was a light... Reading that book, reading the book, as I am now, is a light bulb moment because yeah. you see things in there and it's like, shit... Yes, I get it. I understand that. yeah. And it's like, look, it just, you know, I've always tried to live my life on record, okay, because you learn every day. You learn something every day, okay? And that, to me, is really, really, is what life is all about. I mean, the day you take your last breath, you should learn something new. And I love it. And, you know, so I'm at a point now, maybe 40 years after you, but I'm all of a sudden thinking, yes, I understand that.
Yeah.
And yes, I get where they're coming from. And yes, it makes sense. And if that's, I'm one individual, nobody special, nothing, I'm just a person, 8 billion other people on this planet. Give them the opportunity to see that, to feel that, to have that pivot, that epiphany that, I mean, I was reading this book and I was away and there was a part in it. It really made me click. And I got up and I went for a walk and I was quite emotional thinking, I get this now.
Do you look back
and
things make sense that have happened?
Absolutely. The things that happened in my life make sense because of various reasons. I mean, when I was ill, I always knew one day I would get ill. I couldn't tell you why.
Yeah.
I just knew I would get ill. There's no rhyme or reason to that. It just happened. So, but I understand now why it happened. Okay. And it's like, if you think negatively or you think shit's going to happen,
yeah,
it will happen. On that logic, if you think good things are going to happen, then good things are going to happen.
Yes.
Why would they not?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
And that's a very simple, very basic understanding of manifesting your destiny. But it's other people would just take that, okay, and just go with it.
Uh-huh.
They'd be so much happier.
Well, they need to join his program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Start there.
Thanks for the plug there.
And sign up.
I was leading her into it.
Exactly. And it's the mentorship?
It's the company's called Platform 7,
okay,
Platform but the 7. The website is
thementoringplatform.com. Thementoring.com, okay.
Mentoringplatform.com.
And so when people go up,
there's different programs.
Are they online or are they in person?
They are both. Both. We do some online, which are pre-recorded. Others are live, either online or in person.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Please.
Would you allow us one time to come along and just listen to what you do? Not take part in it.
With absolute pleasure.
Because it would be good, you know, it would be good to speak to some of the people if you had no objection to it.
Come.
To get an understanding of how they feel, like a before and after.
Mm-hmm. Would you? You can do that, or alternatively, I mean, one example, we actually... there's some entrepreneurs in Holland, in the Netherlands. They had their own Netflix TV show and they run a jewellery company. And they did the course, the 8-week course, and their cousin, who's bizarrely, she's a judge on the Shark Tank version in Holland. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't actually understand why all these people were coming onto this course because they're already incredibly successful. Two of the three girls had this thing about being in Forbes 30 under 30. And after the course, that was the thing they focused on and they manifested in that. So we can talk to people like that, or with pleasure, you can jump in with.
Yeah. Fine.
Actually, that'd be great people to talk to.
Yeah.
I think we're going to start seeing you manifesting during this podcast.
Already have.
You already have? Good, good, good. I'm glad. But you're right. I wish more people have it. And they will, I think. But it takes us. And it takes the community of us and like-minded people to normalize it. It's been part of the woo-woo. Oh, well, you're, you know, either on some sort of ecstasy or ayahuasca or whatever you need to do, some alternative drug to get this, you know, this feeling of euphoria to get that level of thinking. But then you come back to Earth and it doesn't exist. No, it freaking exists. You speak to professional athletes. They spend time, you know, working with mind. Working with see it, visualization when they get hurt. That's why they heal better. You know, professional, you know, visionaries, they spend as much money working on this than their diet and their, you know, the physicality of whatever they need to do. And it's like, why not? Why not do this? And so the fact that you're now dedicating this next chapter in your life to, it must feel you're on the right journey, right? Because now you're doing this, but it must be so fulfilling knowing that you're providing this self, you know, you're not being selfish about it. You've learned something and now you want others to achieve. That's actually, I don't know. Tell me, am I correct? What do you feel?
I enjoyed real estate.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed leading a team of young people, but I didn't love real estate.
I now,
it was a vehicle for you.
It was a vehicle. This is, I get to do what I love every single day. And the only problem with that is I don't know where my life ends and my work begins. Because so my biggest challenge now is actually taking time away and like time off working. Right. But I love it. I feel very lucky.
Good.
So what we'd like you to do is manifest a card that has a question on it. Okay, mm-hmm. if you would, read it out, answer it if you would, mm-hmm. and then Norma and I will answer it as well.
Cool. We asked this from all of our guests.
Shit.
Oh, no. What?
What have you learned about love?
That's your universe coming to you there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I know what
there's a reason.
Like a mentor I've had has spoken, has said this over and over and over and over again virtually my whole life. And the older I get, the more I realize it's absolutely real. And it's such a simple thing, but this is it. Love is all there is. The end.
That's what I was going to say.
Sorry for stealing your
yeah,
rat.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
Well, no. which means I'm going to give you a second.
Someone told you that. Your mentor said that mm-hmm. to you. Okay, so...
Another mentor, like a spiritual mentor.
A
wonderful woman.
A woman who's a spiritual mentor of mine who died. And she came back. She was clinically dead for like 10 minutes, and she came back. And one of the messages, because I asked her, was she was told, love is all that matters.
Okay, so... Take that as a given, because it is. Because in the absence of love, you see what happens in the world today.
Right.
It becomes a world, becomes toxic.
Yeah.
But what was the question? Read out the question, sorry.
What have you learned about love?
All right, so what have you learned about love? Okay, so saying love is all there is a statement. What have you learned about love? Yep. Okay, my answer to that is love is the most deep, warm, cherishing, nourishing, nurturing, embodying, encompassing feeling any human being can feel from one person to another, okay? That is what it means in my eyes, okay? Now, love, like success, are two very ambiguous words, okay? Yeah. All right, love, I love chocolate, okay? I'm not in love with chocolate.
Sure.
Okay? Success could be getting out of bed in the morning. Some people's success is running a marathon. It's got different meanings. But what is... That's the is. That's what it does. You know, your parents, your friends, your mentor, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your this, your that. It doesn't matter. If I'm looking at love, that's what love is. And there's no other way you love, okay? Because if it's none of those, it's not love.
If I thought it was a bad answer, I probably wouldn't tell you it's a bad answer. But I actually, I think it's, I don't think you need me to tell you, I just think it's an absolutely magnificent answer. And I think... Part of the reason why I had the old shit moment when I saw the question was A, because I think there are so many different ways you can answer it, and B, what my mentor has been telling me all these years, just it was just she'll be smiling and laughing when she hears what the question was. But that is on point. Like it's just
great,
such a powerful answer.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It took me 56 years to get
it. But you got it. You got it. That's the most important part. You got it.
So the last thing, mm-hmm. okay, we would ask. Okay, as we do with all our guests, is you've had an amazing journey. Okay, you've obviously had things in your life that you've had a great run. You've had some highs, you've had some lows. You're doing what you love. You're not working. It's your passion. It's you know you're doing what you love. But to anyone else, to any other 16-year-old that's listening to this, or parent of a 16-year-old that's listening to this, what advice would you give to someone starting out?
Can I give it through a very brief, like, 90-second story?
With greatest of pleasure.
I listened to a podcast on the weekend, which may be one of the greatest podcasts I've ever heard. But single episode.
Sure.
Okay.
Single episode. Yeah, I mean, nothing's competing with this.
All right, good.
You know, the fighter, the UFC fighter, a guy called Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. Francis Ngannou grew up in Cameroon. And he dreamed of getting to America and being a fighting champion, a boxing or a martial art champion. That was his obsession. And he knew the only way he could make his dream come true was to get to America. The only way he could get to America was first he had to get to Europe. Getting from Cameroon to Europe in 2012, this was, I think, was a nightmare. He tried by boat, he tried to go over fences to get into Morocco in Europe. He failed 6 times. He got caught. He fell on barbed wire. He tried over and over again. Eventually, on the 7th time, he got to Morocco. He goes into a gym and he gets to Germany via Morocco. He goes into a gym. He's never boxed in his life. He's a 23-year-old kid with his dream of boxing. And he's got no money, nowhere to stay. And he goes into the gym and he finds this trainer. And he said, this is my story. I've been trying to get to Europe for however many years. Blah, 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 blah. I've got no money. I've never boxed. And he just says to this boxer, can you help me? The trainer said, yes. The trainer said, I'm going to teach you. This is a true story. The trainer taught him how to fight and found him a home. Francis Ngannou got to America, became world champion. He's now a multi-millionaire living his dream. And the question that he got asked was, why did you keep going? Why didn't you give up? And he looked at the interview and he said, why would I give up? Like, it was my dream. And he said, but even after 6 times of failing, and he said, the ultimate failure is not the mini failures, the failing the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth time. The ultimate failure is not trying in the first place. So to answer your question, the only advice I would ever give anyone is go for what you really want. No restrictions. Don't listen to what your parents or society or anyone else is telling you to dream or vision or goal set or manifest or North Star you want to set. Go for what you really want and just go for it. And if you can implement the majority of the things we've discussed in this conversation, you don't need to worry about how you're going to get there. You will find a way and it will happen. So that would be my advice.
It's really good.
Amen.
Ricky, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's the longest conversation. We met 7 years ago, really? 2 years ago.
And it's on a recorded podcast.
I know. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure. Absolutely. Really. Pleasure.
We want to actually do one just on his platform. I would love to hear more about the platform you have.
Yeah.
With pleasure. But really, thank you so much. I didn't know where this conversation was going, but I really, really enjoyed it. And we're done, aren't we?
Yes.
Your answer is magnificent. And just I don't know, I've done a few of these, but this was like a really, I don't know, you made me feel very, it was very, like I can't explain
it. You were speaking amongst the like-minded, spirited people here.
Look.
It was great.
Yeah. Honestly, it means a lot to us when you say that. I mean, as I said to you before, we're very relaxed. It's very easy going, but this is who we are.
Thank you for tuning in to Energist Podcast, where ambition meets achievement. If today's stories energized you, share this episode with someone who needs that spark. Stay connected. Subscribe to our newsletter at nrjmediagroup.com and follow us on social media for more powerful insights. Until next time, stay inspired, stay bold, and keep striving for greatness.
Energist Podcast is produced and hosted by Norma Garcia and Rich Reed. The incredible talent behind us. We are highly engineered and edited by Rich Evers. Our seriously creative director is none other than David H. Tanaka. Our talented music composer is Steve Devaney. Our devotion to motion graphic designer is Mike Macklin. Our very spirited technical advisor is Tracy Williams. Our amazing marketing manager, Lauren Carter. Our man of many words publicist is Josh Gershman. And introducing our producer's assistant, Blake Mealy. Energist Podcast is brought to you by NRJ Media Group.